Janavallabha Girivaradhari Jaya Gopi Janavallabha Girivaradhari Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana Yashoda Nandana Yamuna Tira Vanachari Yamuna Tira Vanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari 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 Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare Krishna, Krishna, Hare, Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, 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 Hare, Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare, Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, 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 Hare, Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare, Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, 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 Hare, Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare, Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, 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 Hare, Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama,
thank you all for coming and welcome to the Sarika class. Nice to see you. ಓಂ ಅಜ್ಞಾನ ದಿನಿರಾಂಧಸ್ಯ ಜ್ಞಾನಾಂಜನ ಶಲಾಕೆಯ ಶಕ್ಷೋರುನ್ಮೀಳಿತಂ ಯೇನ ತಸ್ಮೈ ಶ್ರೀ ಗುರುವೇ ನಮಃ. ಸೊ ದಿಸ್ ವೀಕ್ ಯು ಆರ್ ರೀಡಿಂಗ್ ಫ್ರಮ್ ಥರ್ಡ್ ಅಂಡ್ ಫೋರ್ತ್ ಚಾಪ್ಟರ್ ಆಫ್ ಭಗವದ್ಗೀತಾ, ವಿಚ್ ಆಕ್ಚುಲಿ ಟಾಕ್ಸ್ ಅಬೌಟ್ ಕರ್ಮಯೋಗ ಅಂಡ್ ಜ್ಞಾನಯೋಗ. ಸೊ ಕರ್ಮಯೋಗ ಮೀನ್ಸ್ fruitative activities in this material world. We do karma, that's called as karma yoga. So if one person does this perfectly, follow the all the rules and regulations of the karma yoga, so what is the end point of that is liberation. Mostly people who are involved in perfectly executing their karma yoga, they go to higher planets, planets of the demigods. The interesting thing about going to the planets of the demigods is, as I explained in the previous classes, it's like a bank balance which will run out eventually. So we reach there, and then as long as we have the pious activity, we stay there for a while, and then we enjoy the enjoy whatever the planets of the demigods has to offer to us, and then we stay there for a while, and once our pious activities dries up, we again come back to this material world to follow our paths to liberation, or going back to home, back home to Godhead, to Krishna, or to the Vaikuntha planets. So it's also said in the Shastras that, especially in Srimad Bhagavatam, that even people who are living in the higher planets and also in the hellish planets, they actually pray for coming back to the human form of life. Because the human form of life is so precious that it's the form where you can use this body to attain perfection. So what happens in many times, it's explained in the Shastra, that when you are in the heavenly planets, your consciousness is covered in such a way that you actually forget your goal. So your goal is actually to go back to Krishna. So there is a risk for being in the heavenly planets. And hellish planets, forget about it. Because in hellish planets, you are always suffering. Because of your activities, like you are under constant pressure, do this, do that, and things like that. So you actually don't have any time to think about God. So you are busy reaping your results of bad activities. So in that sense, having a human birth is very good. And the fourth chapter talks about the Jnana Yoga. So Karma Yoga is more of a person who wants to do things. I want to do this, I want to do this. So someone who always wants to engage in some sort of activities, they are karma yogis. So jnana yogis are the people who are like completely frustrated with this material world. Because it's like a chewing of the chewed. Because this thing has already been chewed, and then if you put it in your mouth, you are again like chewing nothing. So they give the example of an camel which eats the cactus. Cactus is the plant which actually has thorns in it. So what happens is, when it takes it and start chewing it, the blood actually comes from the mouth of the camel, because the thorns like disturbing the, like tearing apart, and then the blood comes, and it actually thinks that this is really tasty. But the camel is actually tasting its own blood. But not knowing that, it's actually tasting its own blood, it just keeps doing it. So in material world, a lot of us are doing the same thing, because we always think that there is something out here which I want to enjoy, and it's already been chewed. So we try to chew it again, and then we do so much of activities here, but it's not giving us the permanent happiness. That's why people keep constantly doing things. This is kind of a tough example, but it's a good example to give how much people in this world, they are actually suffering. Because they actually want to involve in so much different activities. So for jnana yogis, they are completely out of that. I don't want to do that. I already went through all this. I tried to achieve this. I tried to achieve that. I want to, you know, do this, do that. But I'm totally frustrated because it's not giving me the happiness and the result which I want. So what they do? They start thinking, like, what's beyond this? Okay, then they come to the state that, okay, there might be something beyond this. It could be the knowledge of why things are arranged in such a way, or why things are happening in such a way. So they want to attain knowledge. So people who are jnana yogis, and what's their ultimate destination is Brahman. Brahman is the light coming from the body of Krishna. So they meditate on the personal form of Krishna in this, as a super soul, and they also attain knowledge, and then they attain Brahman realization. Even Brahman realization is also temporary. So you still have to, there is a risk of you coming back to the material world. So you don't want that. Okay. So who is the best? Yep. The bhakti yogis, they are the best. Because in one sense, the bhakti yogis, they are not frustrated with this material world. But at the same time, they don't want to enjoy too much of this material world as well. So they are in the proper balance. So they are in perfect balance. That they want to be in this material world. Something may come accordingly, based on the karma and, you know, based on the mercy. Something may come by doing little fruitive activities. So they accept it for the service of Krishna. And at the same time, they be here, they are not too attached and they are not frustrated. So they are in the state of balance. So when you are balanced, you are happy. So the bhakti yogis are always happy. They are involved in activities. But what activities? Activities related to Krishna, right? So they do devotional service. Because Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita that if you perform bhakti yoga, it actually gives you the transcendental happiness. Because it's devotional service is beyond the three modes of material nature. So basically how we act in this material world is based on our three modes of material nature, which is goodness, passion and ignorance, right? So we are made up of permutation and combination of this, and sometimes goodness increases, and then like we are like super good to, you know, and do everything nicely and things. Sometimes passion, okay, I want to achieve this, achieve that. And sometimes we are in tamasic, you know, ignorance, like, oh, all I want to do is just sleep and do nothing, being lazy. So based on the modes of material nature, you know, our senses get attracted to so many different things and so many different activities. And then, as we discussed in the last class, if you don't control our mind using our intelligence, the senses can go all over the place, and then it can actually create problems in our life. Not necessary problems, but at least anxieties in our life, you know. So we actually want to transcend the three modes of material nature by practicing bhakti yoga. So when we practice bhakti yoga, it is beyond these three modes of material nature, which is transcendental. So when we do bhakti, our real nature gets revealed and reawakened, which is Sachid and Ananda, which we discussed in the last class. Okay. So as I explained, devotional service or bhakti yoga also includes the karma yoga and jnana yoga. Because we do activities, but we actually do it with knowledge. Why we are actually doing these activities? Once we do it with knowledge, that's the best way to do it. So how to do devotional service? So for performing the devotional service, we need some guidance. We always need guidance. It's explained in the Shastras that to do devotional service, one has to follow three things, which is Guru, Sadhu and Shastra. Guru is a spiritual master, Sadhu is saintly person, and Shastra means scriptures. You follow these three things. Thus, so today we are going to discuss about the role of Guru and how becoming a good disciple can help us to attain perfection, Hi, Bolkan. Welcome. Hello. Welcome back.
Thank you.
So today we are going to discuss how to become a good disciple and what are the qualities we have to inculcate so we become a good disciple. So, as we know, in the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna actually says that, you know, one should approach a bona fide spiritual master and do menial service to him and then inquire submissively from him, because the spiritual master has seen the absolute truth. He can impart the absolute knowledge, you know, the supreme truth. It's basically, you know, Krishna and Krishna's pastimes and, you know, name, form, pastimes, everything about Krishna. So Krishna actually just gives in one verse that you should approach the spiritual master and you should, you know, inquire submissively. But Krishna, he didn't explain in detail what a disciple should do. So this class will be focused on what a disciple should do so he or she can become a perfect disciple. So for that, what I did, I took verses from Udva Gita. Udva Gita was spoken by Krishna, again Krishna himself, to his dear friend, not Arjuna, but Udva. So this is explained in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Like Bhagavad Gita is part of the Mahabharat, Udva Gita is also part of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Right. So, so gurus. So how many gurus we have? So we have our Diksha Guru, we have Siksha Guru, and we also have Chetya Guru. So who is the Diksha Guru? Diksha Guru is the guru who actually gives you the Diksha initiation. He connects you to the Guru Parampara, which goes all the way back to Krishna. And we have Siksha Gurus. Siksha Gurus are those who give us the knowledge. Normally a person will have one Diksha Guru who give him mantra initiation, but Siksha Gurus are the people, or the, you know, are the saints who actually gives knowledge. So it could be your spiritual mentor, it could be a guru in the movement, or it could be anything. Even in Srimad Bhagavatam, it's explained that there are 24 people and objects which are considered as guru. So, which also include, you know, water, air, fire, and everything. So they all can, even a tree for that matter, a mountain for that matter. So they all can be our gurus. If we have the right vision, we can see that all these different things can act as our gurus. So we have three gurus, like we have Diksha Guru, Siksha Guru, and also the Chaitya Guru. Who is Chaitya Guru? Chaitya Guru is none but Krishna himself. So he is, as you know, he is located in our heart as a Paramatma. So he is called as Chaitya Guru. So when we are in fine tune or in the right wavelength, Krishna reveals from the heart that what needs to be done. In many cases, especially in terms of finding a guru, if we are sincere, what happens? Krishna from the heart reveals to us that whom you should approach and take shelter from to take initiation. So in most of the cases, because you might have noticed that you will meet so many different persons, so many different gurus, but your heart actually goes to one particular person. Why? That's actually because Krishna inside you as a Chaitya Guru, he's telling you that, you know, this person may be the person for you to take initiation from. So it's even in mundane relationships, like you actually like have affection and love for so many different people, but you know, you always have someone very special in your heart, you know. So something like that. So which also happens in choosing the guru. So we discussed about the three different gurus. Now the important part is, what are the qualities a disciple should have, or at least inculcate, so he can serve his guru properly. So Krishna, there are actually five of them. He explains in the Udva Gita to Udva. So the first one is, the disciple should not have any false pride or ego. That is extremely important. So, example, how one cannot have false pride. What he's trying to explain is that you should not start thinking that you know, we commonly seen that familiarity brings what? Contempt. Right? So you take initiation and you spend such amount of time with your guru, and then after that you start thinking that he is just an ordinary person. Because like you know, he will be sitting with you and then he will be eating prasadam with you because he is very humble, and then he will be conversing with you like any other friend. And after a while, a lot of people get into thinking that he's just another person in my life. So that is very dangerous. So a disciple should always think within themselves that I am a servant of my guru. So we should be very careful not to get this familiarity brings the contempt issue come into our spiritual life. That's very important. And the other aspect of is that I am the guru's best disciple. That's very dangerous. So because the guru wants you to do one, you know, several services and, you know, things like that, that doesn't mean that you should think that, oh, I'm doing all these things for my guru, you know, I'm very special. And if this thought gets into your system, that's not good for you. Again, you always think that, you know, I'm just a menial servant of my guru. And you also notice that because you actually get this thinking that I'm special, I'm doing a lot of things, what happens when situations are not right, you know, people try to make up, meaning that they actually try to overdo things to impress the guru. So what happens, that is also not good. So you should always in the mood of serving the guru, not to do things that you are under constant pressure that I want to do something for the guru, so I should do something, I should do this, I should do that, and then, you know, running around like a crazy man. You don't want to do that. So these are all against false ego and false prestige. These are all not real. These are all, the real position is Vaishnava Dasanu Dasanu Das, servant of the servant of the servant, as Mahaprabhu explains. So that should be our position. And it also applies to a disciple towards his or her own guru, and also the other gurus. And second important thing, no laziness. So what Krishna actually, what he is trying to say, laziness means the person should be enthusiastic. A disciple should always be enthusiastic. What do you mean enthusiastic? It could be anything. Enthusiasm means you should be enthusiastic to serve your guru all the time. You should be in a position to serve your guru all the time with enthusiasm. Even though the guru may probably ask you like doing some menial service or like some tough task or something like that, but you should always think that I'm actually doing this for my guru because, you know, he's great. And then, so you do things enthusiastically. So even though Krishna uses the word laziness, but the hidden meaning is you need to be enthusiastic. You should not sit idle. You should always be serving your guru and Krishna and the Vaishnavas. So this is the second point. And the third point is no false proprietorship for the family. This is a tough one. Again, this is a hidden meaning. So no proprietorship for the family means not that you know, if you are a grihastha or even a brahmachari or mostly brahmacharis and grihasthas, they are more attached to the family, because when people become vanaprasthas, they mostly like traveling to different parts of the world, and then they live very simply, and then they visit temples and things like that, and say they are in the process of getting more detached. Sannyas, no family, because in the stage of sannyas you completely renounced everything. So in our Vaishnava sannyas, we actually have three sticks, you know, three dandi, you know. A person who actually takes sannyas in the Vaishnava tradition have three sticks carrying with them. So what it actually means, mind, body and words, all completely surrendered to Krishna. The three sticks actually represents to mind, body and words completely. Words in the meaning also like action, you know, completely surrendered to Krishna. So they have renounced every material attachment in this world.
What do you mean, like characteristics? Like, would they carry with themselves three sticks?
Or? They normally should. So we have science, right? I will give you an example. For example, for a person who is married in Western countries, they actually put a ring in their ring finger. That means that the person is married. And they have different signs for this. Like that, a person who has taken a sannyas, so no, he has to carry all these three sticks wherever he goes. But for practical reasons, because a lot of sannyasis, they travel around the world, they can carry the things in the aeroplane and things like that. So not all of them carry. But in theory, wherever you go, you should carry the, you know, three danda, showing that you already taken the renounced order of life.
And these are called danda?
Danda means stick. D-A-N-D-A, danda. Three means three.
And it's like regular size, like sticks, or like a
small? This size. The Christmas tree size, something like that. Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe they could get mini sticks.
So, people who are in the Vanaprastha and Sannyas stage, they are not too attached to their family and things like that. But brahmacharis, even though the ideal brahmachari stays in the temple or stayed with the guru, but he or she, brahmacharis and brahmacharinis for that matter, they actually have parents. And the grihasthas, they have wife and wife, children and things like that. So what Krishna actually saying here, no sense of false proprietorship, that actually means that you actually stay in touch with them, but you are not attached to them too much. So the duty of the disciple is, even though he or she may have a husband or a wife or a child, but they act in such a way that they engage the family in Krishna consciousness. That is the best thing to do. If you have a parent, if you are a devotee, the best thing you can actually give to your parents and your family is to make them Krishna conscious, make them devotees. So some people it's easy, some people it's not easy. So you do in different ways, like give them prasadam, because taking prasadam has a lot of good effects on people. And then if you're coming and if you're getting some maha garland, you can actually go and give it to them so they can smell it. And these things have very profound effect on the consciousness of people. The example given in Srimad Bhagavatam is the four Kumaras. The four Kumaras were completely detached. They were like liberated souls, eternally young, and they were like wandering around. But when they smelled the tulasi, which was offered to Vishnu, Krishna, what happened? They became devotees. So that is the power of all these things, like prasadam and tulasi leaves and maha garland, and then attending the program, hearing harinam in the streets. These are all very powerful techniques in which you can give Krishna to a person. So the same thing, the best thing we can do is to give Krishna to our family members. So what happens if the entire family, let's say, you know, husband, wife, or like child, or father, mother, or brothers and sisters, if everyone has Krishna as the center, what happens? Everyone is happy. There is no quarrel, there is no fight, there is no issue in the family, because they all know the core, they all know the focus of their life is to serve Krishna and be happy. So this is the perfect arrangement. If we can make this happen, that's the best thing. Even Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, Bhaktivinoda Thakur is a grihastha, he had like 10 children and he was a magistrate in the British government, and he was working 8-10 hours a day and then getting up early in the morning and writing books for, and then taking care of the family. He said that when all my family, kith and kin, everyone, my children and my cousins, everyone, when they all come to my house and when they all involve in Harikatha and doing kirtan, engage in kirtan, this is Vaikuntha itself. This is Vaikuntha itself. Vaikuntha means this is the place of Krishna, this is the place of Vishnu. So it's not that I have to, literally have to go to the Vaikuntha to experience, because all these people are here, because everyone is engaged in Krishna Katha and doing the kirtan. That's exactly what happens in Vaikuntha plan. So if I can get it here, this is the best place to be. That's what Bhaktivinoda Thakur says. Same with this thing. So the third point is no false preparation for the family. So the fourth point is no enviousness. I'm equal to everyone. This enviousness is really a hard thing to get it up from our consciousness. So we are all here in the first place because we had certain amount of enviousness when we were there. Or it could be explained in such a way that eternally the soul wanted to have some experience in the material world. So what happened? Boom, tatastu, you are here. So some acharyas explains that it is kind of enviousness, because you actually wanted to separately enjoy the world from Krishna, forgetting maybe even for the slightest of the moment that Krishna is the controller and we are all, you know, servants of Krishna. So in spiritual world there is no concept of time, right? It's eternal. So here, for our understandings, the acharyas have given, okay, Kali Yuga goes for this much amount of time, or like Satya Yuga goes for this much. So we can understand that how small we are and how big is Krishna is. So in spiritual world, it's eternal and there is no time limitation. So the example given is when Lord Brahma, he got little mischievous. So what he did, he actually hid all the gopas and the cows away from the Krishna. That was his desire. And he actually did that. It was, for a fraction of a second, maybe something like that. But in earthly calculation, it was already 1 year. So what Krishna did? He manifested himself to all the cows, all the cowherd boys. And then every one of them were looking exactly the way they were. they were all going back home. You know, the cowherd boys, you know, they were taken care of by the parents and things like that. And then the cows were taken care of by their owners and things like that. They were all looking exactly the same. And when Lord Brahma came into consciousness and realized that, oh my God, Krishna actually had done it. He expanded himself exactly the same way they were before. He was like, oh, I made a mistake. So he surrendered to Krishna. And Krishna, okay, all right, no problem. So that's how the time factor works. So the point I was trying to say is that the disciple should not have any enviousness. So enviousness means sometimes what happens is this is extreme situation. But sometimes the disciple become envious of his or her own guru. That shouldn't be there, because that's big Vaishnava prad, and then that's not going to help you in progressing in Krishna consciousness very nicely. They become envious of the own guru and also their god brothers and god sisters, because you know, let's say your god brother is a fantastic, you know, like flute player, and then you can't even like know how to handle a flute. Then like, you know, there is a natural thing of like getting envious, because like, you know, your god brother or you know some other devotee is doing it so nicely. That's enviousness. So you need to try to avoid and stay away from enviousness. So what is the solution? If you are envious about one particular person or one particular thing, what should you do? You should go and serve the person. That is the solution. That is the easiest solution. So what happens when you start serving the person, the enviousness from the heart gets washed away slowly. Again, it's not only about the devotees per se, but to anyone for that matter. We should never be envious. So the other easiest way to do is to be equipoised and to be nice and equal to everyone, all our friends and families and the society and things. Which is not an easy task, but it could be done slowly and slowly. At least if you try to serve the other person, then you are so busy that you actually don't have to think about becoming envious. So you are busy in serving the other person. Okay. So this is the fourth point. And the fifth point is extremely important. Avoid useless talk. Very tough. In this material world, it's extremely tough. So how to do that? So unwanted talk of, you know, different things. It could be anything, you know. So that's called as what? Prajalpa. Or Gramyakata. Some people call this Gramyakata. You know, unwanted talk, you know, unwanted topics. You don't want to get into all those things. Because what happens when you start doing it, there is always a risk of getting attached to it. So when you get attached, you want to talk more. You want to talk even more. And then what happens, it doesn't just stop with the talk, because you want to do some action based on your conversations, which leads to extra actions, which is unnecessary. So this is kind of a cycle again. It goes through it. Okay, I talked about it. I want to try that. You go and do it. And then it causes some kind of reactions. And then you do something to counteract that particular reaction. So the karma cycle keeps going. So that's why the acharyas suggested that you should learn how to control your tongue. That's very important. Even in Nectar of Instruction, Rupa Goswami says that A person who can control his tongue, it's very good. He says different things that need to be controlled, you know, your tongue and, you know, your other actions and things like that. But tongue is very important. So a lot of problems in this material world can be solved if people can keep quiet. So how to do that? Instead of just forcing someone to just asking or he or she just keep quiet or something like that, the easiest way to do is to talk about Krishna. That's much easier. You talk about Krishna because Krishna's name, activities, form, everything is transcendental. You can talk about Krishna, you can talk about Krishna's pastimes, you can talk about Krishna's transcendental qualities. And you know, if you are involved in mundane talk, you know, nonsense talk, it gives us like some kind of satisfaction for our senses for a while, and after that it gets bored. But the topic of when we discuss about the topics related to Krishna, it actually gives us always the happiness. We actually don't get bored. So it's much easier to do Krishna Katha than Gramya Katha or Prajalpa. So why Krishna is suggesting to a person who wants to be a perfect disciple? Because if the person keeps quiet and grave and focus on his or her service, then the guru will be pleased. Because he's not diverted, he is not distracted, but his main role is to focus on how to serve my guru. So one way of doing it is don't just talk, but just go and serve the guru. So this is the last thing Krishna suggests that one disciple should do. And okay, in terms of getting the absolute knowledge from the guru, it's given as an example that the guru, let's say like if you have a fire, the guru is the one who is considered to be the lower wood. You have wood, like you actually use the wood to ignite the fire, right? The guru is the lower wood. And then the middle wood, there are three layers. You have the lower wood, you have the middle wood, and you have the upper wood. So the lower wood is the guru. And then the middle wood is the instructions from the guru. And the upper wood is the disciple, the shishya. So what happens is when there is an interaction between the three different woods, the fire which is created from this removes or burns all the ignorance that comes out of the three modes of material nature. So the guru kick starts from the bottom through instructions, that is the middle wood. And then it just all the questions and all the ignorance which are present in the heart of the disciple gets burnt away, and then the person completely surrenders to the instruction of the guru. So this is the example given in the shastras about the relationship and interaction between the guru and shishya, disciple, and their interactions. Okay, so I want to reiterate what I mentioned about the qualities a disciple should have. The first one is no false prestige, no false ego. The second one is no laziness. The third one is no false proprietorship for family. And the fourth one is no enviousness and equal to everyone. And the fifth one is avoid useless talks. So Hare Krishna. Any questions? Well, I mean, it works this way. Chaitanya Charitamrita says that the Guru gives you Krishna and Krishna gives you the Guru. It's normally how it works is, initially when you are sincere, Krishna gives you the Guru to surrender. And then when you start serving the Guru will show you the path to go back to Krishna. So the easiest way is to serve the Guru, to serve the Vaishnavas, so they can impart you the right knowledge. So this is like, if you have a building with 50 stories, and then, you know, rather than you figuring out and then taking the steps and, you know, going back to the top of the building, so the Guru and the Vaishnavas, they are like the elevator, the lift. They can take you there very quickly. Because as Krishna explains in the second chapter, they have seen the absolute truth. They are already in tune with what Krishna wants. Because, you know, as I explained in the last class, becoming a devotee of Krishna and to understand the nature, the bhav of Krishna is extremely difficult. Because he says that manushyanam sahasrashu, right? Out of thousands and millions of people, one want to attain perfection. And out of all those people, thousands of millions of them, one, you know, actually want to become a devotee. And out of all those people, you know, one know me in truth. That's what he explains in the Bhagavad Gita. So for us, instead of trying to figure out everything by ourselves, if we can serve the Guru, he can easily give you the knowledge about Krishna and how to go to Krishna. So that's kind of like a secret shortcut. Yes? Pam, you had a question?
Thank you very much for the talk. It was very helpful, especially the illustrations that you gave with each of the characteristics. One of the questions that I had to do with detachment. And I think when I first was trying to deal with that term or that concept in the context of spiritual life, I wasn't really sure what it meant. I wasn't sure if it was meant that I was supposed to not love things so much or people so much or what it really meant. But I think I understand it a little bit better in the sense that this idea of detachment is really the opposite of attachment, meaning that I not see these things as mine. This is not my child, this is Krishna's child. This is not my wife or husband, this is Krishna's wife or husband. This is not mine, this is Krishna's. And I love something that belongs to Krishna. And that's the detachment, I think. It's not that I love this person any less, or that I feel but the idea of possession, or that it's mine, is what I don't experience. I don't experience the proprietorship. I understand that it doesn't belong to me. It's not mine.
Exactly.
Is that?
Exactly. Okay. So everything belongs to Krishna, and then everyone is here to serve Krishna, and then they are all parts and parcels of Krishna. So as you said, as explained here as well, one of the point is no proprietorship. It not only like, you know, it's even though it's specifically mentioned about family, but it also means anything for that matter, any material objects for that matter. I mean, that's actually called as yukta vairagya. Have you heard the term before? Yukta vairagya means you can use all the the tools in Krishna's service. This is a tool. I mean, like an iPad is a tool, iPhone is a tool, you know, the recorder is a tool. But you still can use it in Krishna's service. So, same in that sense that you can use all the material objects and things like that in Krishna service. But we need to be very careful when it comes to people and devotees. I was explaining in the last class that we actually should love devotees and people, and we should use material objects to live in this world. But in a consumer society, what's exactly happening is the opposite. People don't love their loved ones, but they actually love their gadgets. They love the gadgets. They're so attached to their gadgets, but they don't have time to spend to their dear ones. So in that sense, we need to be detached from material objects, for that matter, thinking that this has been given to me to serve Krishna. Again, when it comes to devotees, you should think that I have to love this person, I have to love this devotee, you know, to the best of my ability, but I should be very careful not to use the person for my own propaganda. I may have desires, you know, like for name or fame or, you know, adoration, distinction, you know, anything for that matter. And the worst thing to do is you actually use devotees for fulfilling your own propaganda, which is false. So that's exploitation. So we need to be very careful in that sense. Yeah, as you said, we have to be attached to the person, but with the right knowledge that they are properties of Krishna. Is it answer your question?
Yeah, it does. Thank you. And I did have one other question, and it was related to time.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that time operates really throughout the shastras. And I've heard the distinction made between this idea of chronological time versus ontological time. That if you try to make sense of time in a chronological sense, when reading the shastras, it won't make any sense. But if you understand it ontologically, it will make sense.
Mm-hmm.
And that's an important difference, because you are talking about eternal time and you're talking about transcendental time, which
can be measured.
Vastly, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Which can be measured. So the reason why the acharyas, even Krishna for that matter, reiterates the importance of time is because we actually have the human form of life, and we need to use it wisely to, you know, to go back to Krishna. That's why he says in Bhagavad Gita that time I am time. So what does it mean? Like, you actually engage more in devotional practices so you can use the time wisely. But again, you need to keep an eye on it, but you don't have to be like super anxiety or something like that. I'm wasting time. Because that actually creates kind of like a vacuum in your head that you miss the point. So rather than worrying about the time, if you are always involved in some kind of Krishna conscious activities or, you know, services and things like that, you actually don't have to worry too much about the time. Even that becomes irrelevant. Because the devotional service is, again, as you said, it's transcendental. It actually doesn't come under any factor, and time is also part of that factor. Krishna will make sure that by the end of the life, he will put you in such a nice situation that you will continue it, even if you can't make it this time. Okay. Any other questions? Okay. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki.
Jai.